Okay, and so to all things canine, and we welcome back our resident dog trainer, Wendy Claxton. Morning, Wendy.
Morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. been boiling over the last few weeks, which nothing to do with anything other than that little yellow ball in the sky being a bit too warm, I think.
Well, it has been, hasn't it? And I love the heat, but the other day, I think it was yesterday or whenever, or today, anyway, whatever day, I've got to the point that I think I've bubbled up now. I've got enough heat in my body to suffice. And the thing that worries me, as it would do, is the poor dogs in this heat.
Yeah, so, it's not a good thing, is it?
No, they're happy that the weather's a tiny bit cooler, but even so, there's lots of residual heat still around. You can feel it sort of on the building and such. Also, it's in the house.
Yeah.
Outside, it might be that little bit cooler, but in the house, we're still sitting at sort of 25, 26 degrees, which is shocking. So you can imagine what I'm sitting here in doing this program.
Yeah.
So. But and the older dogs and the young dogs, they really, really suffer. One of our little old ladies is, I think she must have puffed all night. And by puffing all night, it burns calories, doesn't it? So
yeah, Nuka's the same. She's, 12 and a half now? And she loves to go out and rest on the patio in the bright sun. But she knows when to come in because it gets too hot. But she does puff an awful lot. And to anybody that comes across that type thing with the tongue hanging out and the constant, that's their cooling mechanism, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. But it have to be fairly sensible, in so much as if the dog knows when to come in, that's great, but sometimes it's a good idea just to bring them in a bit sooner and allow them to lie on. We've got a stone floor in the kitchen, so allow them to lie on the stone floor. We had our friend's dog staying over recently, and they really suffer from the heat. They're not long-haired or anything like that. They're just hot dogs, and one in particular, so he was just lying on the stone floor all the time, whereas our dogs, oddly enough, don't lie on that, but they lie perhaps in the doorway where there's a little bit of a draft. But again, just remember they need lots and lots of water, and of course with water then comes wheeze. If you've got an older dog, they're going to want to wee more, and bless their hearts if they're that little bit older, which a couple of ours are. You can get trouble with incontinence because obviously they're drinking so much to get the moisture back in that they're panting out. And drinking doesn't make a dog cool, but it replaces the moisture that they've lost.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to say we've got the two dogs that they have very, very different attitudes to this. Nuka, so there are dog bowls around the house with water they can go to. They know where they are and Nuka sort of avails herself of those, and you're drinking occasionally. But then Archie, bless his little cotton socks, doesn't use any of those. He's got his own little drinking receptacle in the garden, which just happens to be the watered down weight for the umbrella. Just leave the lid off of that and he'll drink the water from there all day.
He's
very, very strange, but he's quite happy doing that. And they find, in some ways, they find their own ways of doing these things. We don't need to be teaching these things. We just need to be making sure that perhaps they're actually getting enough water or keeping out of the sun enough. Because one of the problems that's been highlighted quite frequently, I think, certainly in the press, is to do with walking your dog in this heat. When you get the sun beating down on concrete or on a patio or whatever, the stones get very, very hot, and the poor dogs have only got those pads. And if we were to walk on those stones or in bare feet, we'd be burning our feet. So can you imagine what it's doing to a dog's feet?
Yes, and that is the thing to take on board, because whilst we might like lying in the sun, and the dog to a point, yes, but to walk it in the full sun on a really hot day is complete lunacy. And you are going to kill your dog. You might not kill it this year, but at some point it will really have an effect on the dog. So the other day it was, I think in my car it registered 32, and I saw a young chap with shorts and just even a vest on, and he was walking a white boxer on pavement.
Yeah.
And that boxer's tongue was hanging. And you just think, you just don't get it, because it's such a pressure on their heart and they're just sort of cooking from the inside. So if you're going to walk your dog, walk it first thing in the morning. And again, you know, look at the temperature. Some dogs really can't take temperatures over 20 degrees.
Yeah.
Other dogs, they might be right up to about 20, 24. But look at where you're going to walk as well. There are wooded areas that you're going to have to drive to, and keep in the shade. That's obviously then a lot cooler. Don't let the dogs run around. The other thing you see is people with these ball chucky things and think, well, do you know what, I'll go on a short walk and I'll tire the dog out for the rest of the day. That's when you're going to really kill the dog, because a hot day, take a ball chucker, because the dog's got used to you throwing a ball for it. Well, you're just going to have to not do it. Also, what I would recommend is, with your new puppy, don't get into bad habits like that. Don't be dictated to that you're going to throw balls, you're going to do this, you're going to play games, because you'll ruin the day. You know, in a few years' time, if we get another heat wave or whatever, and that dog won't do anything, it's pestering you for a ball, you're really going to have to be careful on that. So there are times that you can walk in the shade, do you good, but also don't feel pressurized to take your dog out for a long walk. It's much better to just stay at home in the cool, keep it cool if you can.
Yeah.
If you can give it a bone to chew, but again, if it's a hot day and they're already panting, I wouldn't recommend you give it a bone, because that'll make them pant even more. Because obviously it's exercise, isn't it?
So, yeah.
You know, that's not going to do them any favours. I know it's tricky, and I know we are conditioned, got to take the dog out, but you've really got to be careful. And again, you know, even just putting them in the car to take them somewhere where it's wooded and cool, they could get overheated in the car.
Mm. So I saw recently, funny enough, a wonderful phrase to do with this: no dog ever died from not going out for a walk.
Yeah, very true, very true.
Which is so true. Dogs are a little more flexible, I think, than humans. And for a large part, they know when to sleep and they know when to sort of be lively. It's some of the younger dogs that are going to give you much more of a dilemma, and you're going to have to make the decision for them. But the older dogs pretty much know, I don't want to go for a walk in this heat. And if I do have to go out for a walk in this heat, I'm going to find the biggest river or puddle that I can find and lay down in it, you're not going to want anyway, are you?
But that's the other thing. I've known, and we had a get together last night, and we were obviously chatting about dogs, funnily enough, and we were saying that, you know, dogs on the beach in the heat. Well, the thing is that we think we like to be on the beach in the sunshine, but it's still, you're still in the heat, you're still under the.
You haven't got a fur coat on the beach.
You're still under the direct rays of the sunshine. And okay, your dog might like water, but you're still heating it up.
And yeah.
One of our chums said they'd gone down to the beach and they actually had to put their shoes on to walk across the sand. That's in this country, to walk across the sand to their car.
I can well believe that.
Yeah, so just don't take your dogs out. And if it means you're going to go to the beach for hours and hours, either get somebody to come and let your dog out, or, you know, make some alternative arrangement.
Just leave them with lots and lots of water, and they'll sleep the day off quite happily, and sort of go out later when the sun's gone down a little bit and the heat's gone out of the day. Or either that, or do it first thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning is probably your best bet, because it's cooled off overnight.
Yeah.
I've done some evening walks, and because we've got night jars up where we walk, and so I wanted to see them. But even evening walks has been on the edge of too warm, especially.
Yeah, I know. We did it last night and had exactly the same problem with this. It was a little too warm. I mean, I think some of that might have been humidity, but that's another story. Anyway, moving on from heat and dogs, dog school. There's a thing. When you mention dog school to people, and of course this is something very close and dear to your heart, I do know, but when you mention dog school to many people, they sort of give you a wry smile. What on earth do you want to send your dog to dog school for?
I know. And a lot of people think, oh, I'll train this at home, it's easy. Well, bits of them are easy, but it's having the mindset about how to problem solve as well, because it's not always, you have to sort of get into the brain of a dog to understand how they think. It's more fun going to dog school because you meet other people with their dogs, hopefully.
There's a socialisation part to this, isn't there?
Massive, because it's not all around charging around with every dog you see. It's funny enough, and what we teach is less is more. We teach the art of doing nothing. And you can see people thinking, I'm paying to do nothing, good Lord. Anyway, so...
I like that.
And dogs, you know, dogs are very... They like doing stuff. And out, obviously, out in the wild, it's a different environment, I know. Ours are domesticated dogs, but dogs are very good at doing nothing out in the wild, but unless they need to. But in this country, where we feel once we've got a puppy, and if it's sort of like a fizzy type of dog, a busy dog, a dog that's known as a high energy, we feel we should be doing something with it all the time. Well, and then that just presses the button, which means do something with me all the time. And then you get all this awful loop where the dog just can't sit around and do nothing. So at school, we teach the art of doing nothing, and it's just literally, and you can do this at home. It's so easy. You just put the dog on the lead and don't get the dog to the point that every time you touch the lead or the collar, that it starts going crazy thinking it's going out for a walk. If you've got a dog that does that already, do it more regularly, but don't take it out for a walk. Every now and again, randomly, wherever you hang the collar and lead, go and get it, take it down, put it on the dog, about 10 minutes, and then take it off again. So you're desensitizing the dog to the thought that it's going for a walk. Then when you've got your collar and lead on, just stand in the middle of the lounge, stand in the middle of the hall, you know, whatever rooms you've got, just stand there. Eat an apple, drink a coffee, but do absolutely nothing. Don't talk to the dog, don't tickle the dog. Just stand there with the lead in your hand. Put your hand in the pocket if you want, and just stand there.
Thing is with it is that dogs don't have particularly long attention spans, do they? So, I mean, I've actually tried this. You can put a lead on one of our dogs and they'll get, you know, this hope in their eyes that, oh, we're going for a walk. 10 seconds later, when you haven't moved, they've just settled down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still with the got lead on, they've settled down. Oh, okay, we're not going anywhere. And then you go, come on. And, oh, we are going somewhere.
Yes, and they don't realise that you initiate everything. They don't. And similarly, you can put the dog on the collar and lead and just sit down and watch some television. But the trick is, don't stimulate them by touching them or talking to them. Just they've got to understand that they're not that important where they're just on the collar and lead. And they're quite happy. Their happiness is just being with you. And then that pays massive dividends, because a bit later on you can take your puppy to for coffee, to a cafe, to a garden centre, to a pub lunch, and they'll get so used to when they're on the lead next to you just doing nothing, it will make your life a lot easier. In fact, one of our girls from class, she messaged me, they'd been to the pub, and because we do this at class, we teach people to walk with their dog and holding two very, very full glasses of water. We haven't moved to alcohol yet. We might have to, obviously, at one point when training gets so bad. But anyway, so we do with two very full glasses of water. And you can imagine what happens. That if the dog pulls, you get soaked, the dog gets soaked, everything. So they've perfected this. And one girl in particular has perfected it. Anyway, she was asked to go and get the drinks at the pub. So she went and got the drinks and came out with two full glasses. She said to her husband, who's also, he's in charge of the other dog, did he want to go and get the drinks as well? And he declined because he knows that he'd probably come back with one and a half drinks as opposed to two. So it's these little things that are just quite useful things to do, but it's about the discipline of being on the lead.
The other thing, I mean, we talked about the socialisation of the dogs and the not getting their expectations up or letting them actually control what they decide to do. The other thing is what they eat. I mean, it's quite an important thing, this, because it leads on to looking after your dog and checking the growth of your dog and all that stuff. But when you get a new puppy, you have no idea what that dog's likes or dislikes are. Even when you get a rescue, you'll get a vague idea of what they've been used to, but what they've been used to is not necessarily what's actually the best thing for them. How do you decide what food you should give your dog?
Yes, I know. And with the rescue centres, a lot of rescue centres have food donated to them, so they're going to feed that to the dog. Some rescue centres are quite particular on food and say, well, no, this is a good food. So, I mean, it's worth talking to them. But I would say you've really, really, really got to do your research, because there's so many different ways of feeding. There's cold pressed food. There's obviously the kibble, which has been very popular since about the 80s. And that's like a biscuit type thing, all the same shape, size, colour. There's natural feeding where you've got the raw food. And then you've got the cooked food as well. And so, you know, there's so many different types. So some of it's about what's going to work for you, but also, more importantly, it's about what works for the dog, because some dogs, if you give them a kibble that's very, very high in carbohydrates, sugars, they can get overexcited. You can get all sorts of character problems with them. And you think it's the dog, and it's not the dog. And dogs have been rehomed to rescue centres for no reason, just because they've been like this. And if only the owners had actually looked at the food and done better research, they could have changed the dog's diet, and that would have changed the dog, and the dog might still be in the home.
I think the advice there really is, if you have a puppy or if you've got a dog that's come from a rescue centre, get them checked out by the vet and seek the advice of the vet as to what you should start feeding your particular dog on. I'm guessing that's probably the best advice.
Yes and no, because I mean, a lot of vets don't even have dogs. I think it's something. I would look at. There's some professional sites online that you could look at. You could ask people that have got dogs. Pet food shops can be very informative, depending on if they're a chain. They're probably going to want you to buy the one with the biggest markup. But just ask around. There's a site out there on the internet called allaboutdogfood.co.uk, and you can tap in the food that you're interested in, and it will come up with the nutritional rating, obviously whether it's low, medium or high. Low, it's in a little red box, and a good nutritional rating, it goes up into a green box, and then it tells you the composition of the food. If it's in the composition, if there's any red writing, red ingredients, that's particularly dodgy. Yellow ingredients are dodgy as well. So good ingredients, and then scroll down, and then it will tell you about carbohydrate, ash, protein, stuff like that. So I think the least we can do as an owner of a dog is know what we're feeding it. I mean, I'm sure people with children know what their children are eating. well, I say that.
No, I get it. Wendy, we're going to have to stop there, because we've run right out of time, believe it or not. We're going to continue with this conversation about food, I think, in the next episode or update on our canine friends. We're also, I think, going to catch up with checking on the growth of your dog as well. But for now, we're on the edge of time, I think, really. Wendy, it's been good to talk, and we'll catch up with you in a month's time.
Thank you. Cheers then. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.